The month in Maine news. September slides to a close with Senator Susan Collins yet again at the center of a major vote in the U.S. Senate. In the wake of yesterday's gripping hearings, Collins has not said whether she will vote for or against Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Her vote could be the deciding vote. There's other news, too. With the fall campaigns kicking into high gear, recent campaign finance disclosures favor Democrats by a wide margin. How much does that matter? And Maine's legislature finally adjourned after a marathon session. Just 2 weeks ago, they adjourned. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are joined by three newspaper editorial page editors for analysis and perspective on the news of the month. What stories mattered most to you? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We are talking about the news of the month here in Maine, and one Mainer is the focus of a whole lot of attention right now, not only here, but nationwide. Of course, that is Senator Susan Collins and her pivotal role in the Kavanaugh confirmation decision. We will try to get to a few other topics as well, though. Joining me today, our panel of editorial page editors. With me in the Portland studio, Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal, Morning Sentinel, and Central Maine Sunday. Greg Kesich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have thoughts on what Senator Collins will do? What questions do you have about other stories? For example, the gubernatorial race. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Ben, you sent out a tweet a little bit ago, which I enjoyed. You said something to the effect of Maine Calling. Well, we'll be talking about the month in news, or maybe the last 2 hours.
Yeah. I think everything either feels like it just happened this second or it happened 40 years ago. And I don't know if that's just something to do with social media or technology or just this amazing news-filled time that we're living in.
Well, and here we are in the 1 o'clock hour. The show is live. If you're listening to the repeat at 7 o'clock, we're having this discussion right before the Judiciary Committee is expected to vote on whether to further the nomination. So by the time this show rebroadcasts at 7 o'clock, we may have a different set of facts to talk about. But Greg, let me turn to you. What is the calculus that Susan Collins needs to be making right now?
Well, it's super complicated and multifaceted, but clearly this is a major goal of the Republican Party to reshape the judiciary. It's a 40-year process that would be completed with Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court, because you would have a durable 5-vote, extremely conservative majority. If you look at where Kavanaugh would fit ideologically on the court, he's way over there with Judge Thomas and Justice Gorsuch. So that would be 3 really solid, very conservative votes on issues like abortion, on environmental regulation, basically regulation in general. And this is something that's been a Republican priority for a long time. Susan Collins is a good Republican. The Senate Majority Leader is Mitch McConnell, is a very very focused on achieving this goal, and is a kind of leader that is going to be pretty tough on anybody who doesn't go along with him. At the same time, Susan Collins is where she is today because Maine women vote for her. And whether or not she has plans to run again for office, she knows, these are her people. It really struck me when I saw Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testifying. If that woman lived in Maine, she would be the quintessential Susan Collins voter. She is a college-educated, professional woman who is not super political and not driven by, partisanship. But who is telling this, very compelling story about an event that sounds very real in her telling. And you have this process where knowing that they have a very small margin of votes, the Republicans feel that they have to get it done as soon as possible, and that means no more investigation and they don't want to hang this judge out and let more people come forward. And they don't want to investigate, I think, because they are afraid that somebody was going to find something out. So anyway, that's the calculus. Where does she fit in with the party? Where does she fit in with her state? And you know, whatever her gut feeling is about whether or not this guy should be on the court.
And Susan, one of the things Greg just mentioned is if Senator Collins runs for re-election in 2 years, if she chooses to run for re-election, she has won by very wide margins in the past. Is this something that indeed could make her unelectable if she chooses something different than what her constituents want her to choose?
I mean, it could. And in the moment, it seems so urgent and obviously newsworthy. We're all paying attention to it. But 2 years is a long time. And so much could happen between now and 2020 when she's up for re-election. This at the moment is a huge issue, but people will move on. There'll be other things that they're upset about, pleased about. We don't know what will happen with the president. It's just so hard to know. And to expand a little bit on what Greg said, not only has Collins been supported by women voters in Maine, but also women's groups. She's been given awards by Planned Parenthood and other groups like that. And they've taken a lot of heat. Even, you know, well before the Kavanaugh allegations came out, because they a lot of people felt like Senator Collins was selling out her pro-choice credentials by backing Kavanaugh, who is clearly pro-life. I mean, the pro-life groups are very pleased with his nomination. And so it'll be very interesting what happens if he is confirmed to the court with groups like that, which have strongly backed Collins in the past. Will they continue to do that or will they move away? And of course, it also depends on who emerges from the Democratic fields. Collins has not always faced really strong challengers either.
Yeah, it's also going to be really interesting to hear her her reasons for how she votes, right? I mean, she has a pretty low bar for these Supreme Court candidates that they have, that their you know, their judicial credentials and temperament are within some wide range that's acceptable. And it seemed like Judge Kavanaugh was right in those range. She didn't have any objections to any of his you know, his thoughts on regulations or presidential power or abortion, even though all of those seem very obvious to everyone else. It wasn't until these sort of things came on. So I wonder if the longer it goes, it seems like she has more things she can point to for reasons not. I mean, she could focus on procedure. You know, we should have an investigation. We don't know all there is. Which is what I think Senator Donnelly from Indiana, the Democrat in a red state, who is an important vote, he just came out and said no, and he centered on the there's just more we don't know here because this is being rushed through. So how this you know, the women's health, the abortion part of this is such an important part for so many people that are involved, but I wonder if that'll even end up playing a role in her final decision.
It did seem like.
And another.
Oh, go ahead, Susan.
Another criteria that Senator Collins has relied on in the past is temperament. And I think depending on your political yeah. persuasion, people came to different conclusions about Judge Kavanaugh's temperament yesterday. But for a lot of people, you know, he was very partisan. Obviously, he was angry, perhaps with some good reason. He was combative, he was smirky. He came across as elitist. Is that the kind of temperament we want on the Supreme Court? So I think it raises that issue perhaps for Senator Collins as well.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. I can't imagine how he's going to sit on cases, even if he doesn't go to the Supreme Court, if he stays on the Court of Appeals. He was so blatantly partisan. And was pulling up, you know, conspiracy theories about Hillary Clinton and revenge against, you know, because people don't like Trump. So it's the kind of thing where I don't know if that plays well, if that politically that plays well in certain quarters, but it's not anything like a judge I've ever seen.
And trying to put myself in Senator Collins's shoes here, we had all this testimony yesterday, which was just amazing, just riveting from the start to finish, and it went all day and into the night. She was at the Capitol late last night, hounded by reporters. She's in her office today. There are people from Maine meeting with her in her office. There are people outside staging protests outside her office in Washington and here in Portland. And she's trying to make this answer. She needs to come up with an answer very quickly. And the only reason she has to come up with an answer this quickly is because they decided to hold this vote, you know, hours after this testimony for no reason. I mean, they
Let's talk about this. When does she need to announce by? My timeline, I understand, is Judiciary Committee is going to vote in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And then the process will be in place for there to be a full Senate vote early next week, Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah. I think the procedural votes start tomorrow.
I mean, they have, I think, like 30 hours of debate, so which means they stay in session all weekend. I heard Mara Liasson say last night they don't want them to go home.
So she needs to.
They don't want them to talk to any voters.
Right.
You know,
she needs to make a decision by Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, and also I think the timing. I mean, you know, all these people that are really upset. The timing of her vote might matter too. You know, if she's a no and it doesn't really matter, then is it does it really mean anything to all these people that are protesting for her? When at any point during this entire cycle, she could have said, you won't have my vote unless you do an investigation. You won't have my vote unless you give us more time, you know, on any of these things.
Could she still say that?
She could. She's never really used her power in that way, although I guess we don't know a lot about what's going on behind closed doors. She operates pretty quietly a lot of times. And there was a story this week about her pressing other senators for more information, for more investigation, kind of behind the scenes. So I wouldn't expect her to come out and, slam her shoe down on the table publicly. But maybe she's doing some of that. We don't know. I know a lot of people don't have a lot of sympathy for her right now, but it is she is in a pretty amazing position right now. The amount of pressure on her from all sides, like Greg said, is got to be excruciating at this point.
Do you remember the healthcare vote last summer? She came out very early and explained what her vote would be or what her conditions were going to be and what it would take to get her vote. And when they didn't meet it, there was no surprise. I don't think she's, into doing this, you know, like the John McCain and just decide at the last second and burst into the room and vote no. I think if there are two Republicans, you would need two Republicans and all the Democrats to vote against. And if that was the case, I don't think there'll be a vote. If Collins is one of two Republicans who are bailing, I don't think she's going to, like, spring that on Mitch McConnell.
Sure. I think she'll tell him ahead of time.
So if there's some kind of delay, I think we'll know going on.
Got it. And I know we're going to return to this topic as the program moves forward, but I want to touch on a couple other issues. Campaign finance. We are, believe it or not, 5 weeks again away from 40 days away from a pretty big election. And we know some more about campaign finance. Susan Young, the Democrats have raised twice as much money as the Republicans, and overall, the money raised is just way more than 4 years ago. What I'm wondering, though, it used to be back in the olden days of, 10 years ago, that financial reports were really meaningful. Are they as meaningful as they used to be?
I don't think so. Obviously, money matters. You need to get on television. You need to get your message out. But at what point do you have enough money to do that and you're just collecting more? Also, remember that Governor Paula Page didn't raise a lot of money before he was elected. So if we just looked at campaign finance reports, it didn't look like he was going to do very well. So it's just really, I think, hard to know. Same with, the signs. You go around counting signs. Does that mean anything? who knows?
Yeah, and there's much outside spending too.
Yeah,
that kind of dwarfs some of it. The governor's race here has been targeted, and the second congressional district has been targeted by national groups, and they're spending a lot of money, and we'll end up spending a lot more money than any of the candidates.
I just read a sort of interesting study by a guy from Stanford who they did about 49 experiments of different campaign techniques in terms of persuading people and changing minds. And they can't really find any evidence that any of it works. Not TV, not radio, not signs, not door-to-door canvassing.
None of the 49?
Yeah, none. You know, they couldn't really find any really clear evidence that it, you know, but nobody wants to be the first one to not do it.
And moving quickly through other topics that in any other day would be really important, the legislature had possibly a record-setting marathon session that just ended, Ben, 2 weeks ago.
Sure, if you say so.
and so there are a couple notable things that happened this month. The governor signed a 4-child welfare laws that changed the way Maine tackles child welfare, sort of measures whether or not a child should be removed from a home, and also provides money for 40 more workers. Have they been hired?
Yeah. Well, this is in response to the two young girls who died. Well, they're in state custody essentially, and then the resulting look into the foster care system and the child welfare system that found all these flaws and found all these deficiencies where their caseloads were going way up and they had not enough people to deal with them and not an old computer system, and there were a bunch of problems with everybody sharing information. So this was a group of bills that was supposed to solve some of that. The governor put forward a group of bills to fix the computer system, increase pay for the caseworkers and for foster families, and also change. He wanted to change slightly how you deal with a kid who might be in a foster situation. Do you try to keep them with their parents, which has always been the policy for the last few years, or do you want to try to figure out the best situation? A lot of that is just semantics, but it was something that was important to the governor. He also wanted to hire a bunch of new supervisors, and the legislature okayed all of that. They also added in a bunch of money for new workers, which is something that just about everybody except the governor thought they needed. He wanted to hold off until next year and let the next governor handle it. The legislature didn't want to wait. So those bills are law now. They're hiring. They're going to run into a lot of the same problems that everybody in Maine is running into. These are low-level positions. They're competing with retail and other healthcare positions that are much easier than dealing with kids who are having have gone through all these crises. So it's going to be tough to get up there. But at least they have the money, and at least there's a lot of eyes on the child welfare system.
And I guess
I think the bills and the funding are very important first steps. But as we found in our reporting and the Press Herald as well, there are real cultural problems within the Department of Health and Human Services. And we've heard from caseworkers who feel that they aren't supported, that their marching orders change from not day to day, but quite frequently. And so hiring more people is very important. But unless there's a more supportive culture where everyone knows what the standards are, people are consistently moving in the same direction, I think, unfortunately, some of the problems that we saw, lack of follow-up, phone calls not being answered, are not going to change just by having more people and more money. We need that change in culture as well.
Yeah, Susan's right. I mean, the process that led to these bills was last minute and done in back rooms, and we don't really know if they've identified the right problems. I mean, there's clearly, when two children die, there's a real problem. But based on what we were hearing from foster parents and frontline workers, it goes a lot deeper than just one or two things. And I guess it'll have to wait till the next legislature, next governor, to really sort of open this up and figure out what's really going on.
Yeah, I mean, that entire department, DHHS, for the last 8 years has been politicized. It's the entire leadership of that department comes from comes from the governor, and they've been entirely focused on cutting the budget and cutting services. And they've also been very bad at sharing information, and the legislature's been very bad at holding them accountable. And so all these problems, the Bangor Daily News has done a great job kind of documenting all these issues throughout the department that are all very similar. The lack of resources, the lack of support for frontline workers right across the board. You know, it's DHH is always a mess. It's just a different kind of mess depending on who's in charge. And right now the mess is putting a lot of people in danger. And the next person that steps in there is going to have their job cut out for them.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. We're talking about the month in review. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the State Theater presenting the live podcast, Welcome to Night Vale, on October 13th. Reserved seated tickets available at statetheaterportland.com. And Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, committed to driving transformation for a healthier future for the people of Maine, anthem.com. And Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is the ultimate prize for Republican voters.
Judge Kavanaugh will be on the United States Supreme Court.
But allegations of sexual misconduct threaten to derail his confirmation.
I've never sexually assaulted anyone, not in high school, not ever.
What would his confirmation or rejection mean for the midterm elections? On the next Politics Show from NPR.
Join us tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Next Wednesday afternoon, October 3rd at 2:20, the Federal Emergency Management Agency will issue a nationwide test of the emergency alert system and wireless emergency alerts to test national warning capabilities. The test message will also be sent throughout the nation to all radio, TV, and also compatible cell phones. You may be surprised if your cell phone receives an alert about 2:18 next Wednesday afternoon, while the broadcast EAS test alert will take place at 2:20. The test will assess the operational readiness of the infrastructure for national alerts. Maine Public, with our statewide radio and television infrastructure, distributes the signal to all Maine broadcasters. Again, the test takes place next Wednesday afternoon at 2:18 for compatible cell phones and 2:20 for broadcasters.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about the top news stories of the month in Maine. Joining me in our Bangor studio, Susan Young, editorial page editor with the Bangor Daily News. With me in Portland, Greg Kessich, editorial page editor with the Portland Press Herald, and Ben Bragdon, editorial page editor with the Kennebec Journal. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Jake, who is calling from Brownfield. Hi, Jake. Go ahead.
Hey, where is Olympia Snow when you need her? I am a liberal, independent voter who has had the privilege of voting for Senator Collins twice since moving to Maine, as has my wife. Once in a great while in every lifetime, you get the opportunity to make a decision of great importance. Senator Collins has been in these situations a couple of times. She's been very quick to express her grave concerns, yet she has been even quicker to march lockstep with the current party. It's shameful, and I'm expecting a lot more from her.
Jake, thanks for your call.
You know, it's I think that her profile is so high right now. Everything that she does, every word that she says is analyzed in a way that it didn't used to be. I think back to when a lot of, you know, her press releases were about different consumer things that she was doing, misleading junk mail for seniors and sweepstakes. And at this point, I mean, people are just on every utterance and looking for something. I guess all I would say to Jake is that, she's always been she's a lifelong Republican, and she has always been a fairly, loyal party member with a few exceptions involving issues that are very important to her.
Jake, thanks for your call. Mary writes in an email, I think a deal was worked out last night with Senators Flake and Manchin to provide cover for Collins and Murkowski. She can vote no, preserve her image as a moderate, and it won't matter. Based on her actions over the past few weeks, I no longer think she's a champion for women and won't vote for her if she runs again.
You know, everyone that's watched this closely has seen has read everything about Judge Kavanaugh and his approach towards abortion. And it seems very clear to everybody on the pro-life side, on the pro-choice side, how he's going to vote. So when Senator Collins comes out and says, there's nothing here to indicate how he's going to vote. He's going to approach, everybody sees it differently. And so that just doesn't pass a straight face test. And it feels like she's talking, like she's condescending to all these people who are very concerned about what is maybe the most consequential vote she'll ever take. So while it's an incredibly difficult position for her to be in, people just aren't going to fall for that stuff. And that's the outcome of it all.
What about this notion that she's they're dealing in votes? Is this is this cynical or is this going on, Susan?
There have been news reports that there is an agreement between Joe Donnelly, forget his first name, Manchin,
Joe.
And Joe Manchin, Lisa Murkowski and Senator Collins, that they will all vote the same way. As Ben mentioned, Senator Donnelly has said he's voting no. Is this true? I have no idea, but it's something that's been floated out there. Also, just want to mention, we focused a lot on how the left and pro-choice folks are very angry with Senator Collins. We can't forget she's also hearing from lifelong Republicans,
right,
from people who are staunchly pro-life, who are urging her just as strongly to cast a yes vote. And so the senator is in an extremely difficult position. You know, everyone's saying you need to listen to your constituents. Well, her constituents aren't all speaking with one voice. And it's not just about abortion, but that's an example that we can focus on where it's very clear that there are two very distinct sides who have totally opposing views on whether Kavanaugh is a good addition or a bad addition to the court. So we can't forget that she is hearing from people that desperately want her to vote yes as well.
Right.
So very difficult decision she has to make.
A tweet from Marfine. Senator Collins' consumer prescription drug prices bill is sitting on Donald Trump's desk. I'm sure that factors into her calculation. Rare for a bill to make it that far.
Okay. I'm humiliated to say, Marfine, that I have not been following that bill.
It was interesting.
I think the implication is that, you know, he's going to be able to hold that over her head. If she wants that bill passed, then she has to vote for Kavanaugh. But there are countless issues that she's championing. I mean, this is a concrete example, but there are other things she wants to get passed in the Senate as well. So is one bill enough of a bribe or whatever to get her to vote the way the president wants?
On a lifetime appointment.
We'll find out.
You know.
Yeah. Marfine, thanks for that tweet. We're going to go to Dirk, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Dirk. Go ahead.
Hi there. I wanted to remind you and your listeners and those who didn't know that William Proxmire, senator from Wisconsin, now gone, but quite a notable one at the time, ran his campaigns after the first two on zero money. He refused to raise any money, and when anybody sent him any money, he sent it back. He spent just enough money for the filing fee every 6 years and was very successful at that. Very successful senator, well-liked, and a real champion in the Senate.
Sure, and you're speaking to all the focus on campaign finance reports, right?
Yeah. Thanks,
Dirk, for your call. We'll move on. We'll go to Teresa, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, Teresa. Go ahead.
Hi. Just a comment on Kavanaugh. It's awfully difficult to put a man on the highest court in this country who would not answer very specific questions yesterday.
Right.
Yeah, he seemed very evasive in a lot of points. And as steadfast and sure he was in his opening statement, he kind of faltered quite a bit when hit with specifics. And he wasn't even hit with that many specifics. There was a few things that I thought the Democrats missed to really hammer him down on. But
Even on the issue at hand of an investigation, in his opening statement, he said he welcomed an investigation, including one by the FBI. But then when questioned specifically about it, he wasn't quite so sure that he wanted an FBI investigation. And frankly, he out and out lied about some things. I mean, he wasn't of legal drinking age at the time of these allegations in Maryland, just small things like that. I mean, we can call them discrepancies, but they're just out and out wrong. And there are examples of that long before these allegations that should have raised more alarm bells with senators, and they should have been pressing to get a lot of these things clarified. You know, after the first hearing, which seems like a long time ago, but was earlier this month.
Teresa, thanks so much for your call. We have an update that the Democrats have left the committee and the vote seems to be delayed. We'll go to Ken, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Ken. Go ahead.
Hello. I wanted to encourage both your guests and Senator Collins to view her decision on this vote in the much longer view. Specifically, what I would suggest that she and you all consider in the quote-unquote calculus would be the historical context of what she is voting upon, and compare that to Margaret Chase Smith's Declaration of Conscious speech in 1950. Ironically, she gave that speech about the functioning of one of the committees run by the Republicans. In that case, it was Joe McCarthy. It was on June 1st, 1950, which preceded an interim election. And to quote, if I can bring it up here, she said, among other things, "The nation sorely needs a Republican victory, but I don't want to see the Republican Party ride to political victory on the four horsemen of calumny, fear, ignorance, bigotry, and smear." So it would be my hope that Senator Collins views herself in that historical tradition, since she often sort of cites Margaret Chase Smith as her inspiration. So I would like to see her live on historically for her courage and not for any kind of cowardice. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Ken's right that Susan Collins considers Margaret Chase Smith to be a hero. And I think she's probably so sick of hearing about the Four Horsemen by this point, because not really more than a couple of days goes by where we don't get a letter where somebody makes this exact point that, you know, why can't you be like Margaret Chase Smith? And I'm sure her office is like, she could probably, you know, pave a road from Portland to Washington with letters that say, you know, mention Margaret Chase Smith. So it, yeah, that's the kind of attention she's getting now on virtually every decision she makes.
Yeah, and
she lamented with Senator McCain's passing that the Senate had lost its lions, and that left a lot of people to ask, well, why can't you be a lion? And, you know, this seems to be the moment, whether we want to call it the Margaret Chase Smith moment or the McCain lion moment. This is a moment where she can make a speech based on conscience that will change, not in a long-term way, unfortunately. You know, it'd be naive to think we're going to suddenly change the culture in the Senate or Congress, but can change the course of you know, this nomination in a very principled way. So, you know, when she asks who will stand up, we have to look at her as well and say, why not you?
Well, I think she's also would probably wouldn't see it as so cut and dry on good and bad. I mean, she has talked about the Senate under Harry Reid and under President Obama, and certainly puts a lot of fault at our current situation back there. So she doesn't see this so much as the Republicans running a bad process. She might see it as an overall bad process. And I don't know how much a both sides are bad speech at this point really helps. I don't know. I don't know what it solves if she stands up like that. I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe that's from
a
different era.
And I'm thinking about a speech. I think of a speech based on, she said there needs to be an investigation.
Yeah.
That should be the focal point. There are so many things we don't know. I understand politically why we're in such a hurry, why do we need to be in such a hurry with such a momentous decision? She's already said there needs to be an investigation. Now the American Bar Association says the same thing. Right. That, to me, seems to be the focal point.
Yeah, and with so many Republicans saying this call for investigation is just an attempt to delay it again, having her take that side certainly would give it some legitimacy, I would think.
We're going to take a quick break. More of your comments and questions after the break. You're listening to Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Taggart Construction in Freeport, working to create healthy homes that respect the environment since 1994. TagCon.com. And CEI, helping grow good jobs and sustainable enterprises with financing and business advising services. CEIMaine.org. And Faderly Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at FaderlyLawMaine.com.
The state's wild fisheries are in flux, but aquaculture is growing fast here. Old ways of farming seafood are adapting to new technologies, and jobs are being created.
For communities in areas like this that are kind of struggling, it's the answer.
Next week, Maine Public Radio visits the cutting edge of aquaculture innovation, from oysters to eels. There are new opportunities and sometimes new controversies. Aquaculture's Next Wave, all next week on Morning Edition and Maine Things Considered.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the news that made headlines this month. At least that's what we usually talk about on the last day of the month. We're really talking mainly about one story today, and that is Senator Susan Collins and her momentous decision about Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. We're here with our panel of editorial page editors, Greg Kessich with the Portland Press Herald, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, and Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. It appears that the vote is not going to happen in the Judiciary Committee for a while, at least. So there won't probably be any more news on that during this program today, though if you're listening to the rebroadcast at 7, possibly by then something will have happened.
You'll know something we didn't. Yeah.
We have an email from Don, and this is a sympathetic email. This must be the most important and painful vote that Susan Collins has had to make. Since I know she will be listening to your show, I would hope so, but I'm not sure about that. We, the people of Maine, need to express our support for her. I have followed this nomination progress, and despite my visceral reactions, I would have a difficult time deciding on the merits of either side of the argument. Regardless of how she votes, let's meet up in Bangor for another standing ovation for our senator.
I think that stands out when you listen to the other callers, are people who are saying, I voted for her twice, and I'm never going to vote for her again, no matter how she votes on this, but, you know. I think Don's point is, interesting.
We'll go to Dre calling from Naples. Hi, Dre. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. And thank you to all the mistakes for all of you guys. Okay, so Mr. Kavanaugh, his comportment, his essence, his very constitution, his sensitive stomach as reasons he upchucked, I would have thought that would have stood out on its own, and I'm wondering if Dr. Blasey Ford had gone second, like maybe like they do at Supreme Court arguments where somebody gets to a second. I don't know. I just feel like it stood out there, and it was so threatening to me. And she rocked my world, and I just don't understand how it doesn't just stand of its own. Mm-hmm. How people are like, oh my God.
Sure, Dre, and this is
possible.
The comportment is what you were talking about before, Ben.
Yeah, and there was also a problem with this, you know, right from the start, this hearing, this whole nomination. The votes have been decided for a while, especially in the committee. And so, you know, all these attempts to get towards information, I mean, at least the Democrats had it on their side that they were looking for more information. Now, there was nothing that was going to get them to vote for Kavanaugh. They were just hoping to find reasons that other people could push them down. That kind of struck me about yesterday, as we have this entire show. It's supposed to be meant to find out facts. And I guess it was really for the people, for people to decide who they come down on. And I guess a lot of people weren't swayed either way. So, I mean, people put a lot of power into all that yesterday, and it certainly helped me, wrap my head around the situation. But, there were 11 guys up on that stage who weren't going to be changed either way. And that's from the start, and that's a tough situation.
But to Dre's point, imagine if it was the opposite, and Dr. Blasey Ford was the one who yelled and screamed and refused to answer questions, and Kavanaugh was the one who was quietly emotional but very strong. Where would we be today?
A lot to think about on a lot of different levels. Thank you, Dre, for your call. We're going to go to Sonia, who's outside the federal building in Bangor. Hi, Sonia.
Hello. Great to be with you. I'm calling with a small but proud group of protesters in front of the federal building in Bangor, and I just wanted to let you know there's a protest ongoing here, too, for those of us who would like to see more time and investigation before this Kavanaugh nomination goes forward.
Thanks, Sonia, for calling in. We'll go to Ralph, who's calling from Belgrade. Hi, Ralph. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Susan Collins, does her political start working for Senator Cohen many years ago. And she had a mentor in that office that became her husband. So Susan Collins... she has somebody behind her always on these decisions. It's not just Susan. So I wonder if you could talk about her mentor a little bit, and maybe we could hear where some of the information is coming from.
So, Ralph, are you saying that she's not her own woman? She doesn't make up her own mind?
Yes. Yep, I'm saying that. And if you do some research on her husband, he's a very... outspoken Republican, and worked for Senator Cohen and became Susan's mentor 25 years ago.
Thanks for your call, Ralph. Susan, thoughts?
I would come at it from a slightly different way, especially based on several of the other calls we've had and comments that Ben made, that yes, in fact, most senators had their minds made up. Many of them had their minds made up before Kavanaugh was even elected. And I know a lot of people think, oh, Senator Collins sits on the fence and this is all a game. But, you know, those of us who have worked with her closely know that she and her staff are poring over lots of documents. They're actually looking at the documents that, you know, Democrats demanded in part of their grandstanding, and that she is really agonizing over this decision. As an earlier caller said, we need to appreciate that she is putting in the time. Some people might not like where it appears that she is going, but unlike many, many of her colleagues, she, I believe, came into this with an open mind. And maybe she has changed her mind back and forth or, you know, just once. But she puts in a lot of time and thought. And it's very agonizing for her to be in this position with so many people angry at her and, you know, calling with threats and things that are horrible that no one should do to anyone, including the media as well. But she's in this position because she really does think about these issues. She does ask a lot of questions. She goes back to her staff, dig this out, get more information. Well, what about this? How does that conflict with what you told me yesterday? She really is trying to, you know, come to a conclusion based on all the information that she has.
We'll go to Julia calling from Portland. Hi, Julia. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I'm calling as someone who's both very strongly pro-life and also opposed to Kavanaugh. I have serious concerns about his record on other issues like workers' rights and and presidential power. I think the idea of a president being able to use this as a self-protective measure is frankly alarming. That's my most immediate concern. As far as the pro-life movement, I think that under the circumstances, his confirmation could prove fatal to its whole credibility. With this occurring under all of these allegations of sexual assault, I think that if he were to be confirmed, and even if he were to eventually cast a deciding vote to overturn Roe, it would be at best a hollow victory for the pro-life cause, because it would destroy all its moral credibility, essentially, and you feed into this narrative, which I believe is a false one, that it's all about controlling women's bodies, because there is so much suspicion now that all of these allegations of him showing horrific and blatant disrespect for women, and it obscures what's not often talked about, which is how abortion can actually serve the presumptions of male entitlement to women's bodies.
Julia, thank you so much for calling in with your perspective.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting point, because I think we tend to just assume everybody is in one camp or the other, and it's good to remind yourself that there's people are more complicated than that. And it's also was really good to hear somebody talking about the actual substance of what kind of judge he would be on the court, which is what something we had been talking about until a couple of weeks ago. But the fact is, this isn't about like a Super Bowl and somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to win and be on the court for the next 30 years.
Yeah. And it's not so much about what happened 35, 36 years ago to me, although that's important. It's also, how he reacted to it and how he reacted to the allegations and how he framed everything the other day. It also, Julie talking also reminded me that we talked about the intensity of this, and if this could last for 2 years, and that 2 years to re-election for Susan Collins is a long ways away. If she votes yes, that's going to be the headline every time he takes one of these votes. Every time he strips women's health care or workers' rights or makes something about presidential power, all those things Julie mentioned, in Maine, that's all they're going to be talking about.
William on Facebook writes, if Susan Collins is listening, I would say to her, no matter which way she votes, one side will vilify her and one side will make her a hero, no matter what. So the worst she can do is put the people of Maine first and her colleagues second. I hope she makes the right decision. We have nods in the studio. I have just a little tiny bit of time. Chris and VZ, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Jennifer, this is Chris Greeley. My wife is Donna Gormley. She loves you.
Oh, say hi to Donna.
I served 8 years in the Maine legislature, and I think that Senator Collins votes with courage. She takes her job seriously. I got to know her from 8 years as a state representative, and good, bad, or indifferent, I think she takes very seriously what she does, and I think she'll really think out this vote.
Yeah, absolutely. We could have Lindsey Graham, okay? We have Susan Collins, and they say Susan Collins from Maine. I think that I don't agree with her all the time, not even most of the time, but it reflects well on our state.
Chris, thank you. And you are our last call. So many more people would like to add their voice to this conversation. We welcome you to put comments on the Facebook page. And I want to thank our editorial page editors, as always, for a terrific conversation. You just heard the voice of Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal, Morning Sentinel, and Central Maine Sunday. Also here in the studio with me, Greg Kessich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. And in our Bangor studio, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Jennifer Mitchell helped us out in our Bangor studio. Maine Calling's theme song was written by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Calling, Maine Public Radio.